Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Taco Tuesday edition. I'm eating tacos. Dom, you're welcome to have tacos. And we got to find guests later. He could pound about most of the tacos in Mexico. Gilbert Brown, the Gravedigger, joining us at 5:30 Central Time. Nothing too important. Just going to talk some life with the Gravedigger, Dom. And tacos, perhaps.
All right, look forward to it.
This hour, Dom, I'd like to take more of a national turn with the headlines. You know, the presidential wannabe, the fascist-in-waiting Ron DeSantis, dropped a new book. The new book. Have you heard anything about the new book?
I have not.
Do you know what it's called, Don?
I do not.
The Courage to be Free.
Oh, good Lord. It does sound like Scott Walker.
Freedom! Except, unlike Scott Walker, it was not ghostwritten by someone more, you know, literate and thoughtful. It was apparently written by Ron DeSantis, or he probably should not pay the ghostwriter. Here is The Guardian's take. Just a bit of this, Dom. The latest polls place Ron DeSantis and Joe Biden in a foot race for 2024. Florida's 44-year-old Republican governor leads the octogenarian president by a whisker. More Americans like DeSantis than otherwise. Whether he can capture the Republican nomination, however, remains an open question. Crudy says he cannot. He has not yet declared his candidacy and trails Donald Trump in hypothetical matchups. Then again, no one else comes close. Said differently, Trump and his legacy remain forces for any Republican to reckon with. Nikki Haley, an announced candidate for the GOP nomination, can barely mention his name. She wants to supplant her ex-boss by alighting him. A bold strategy. DeSantis is patient. He will probably wait to announce until late spring when the Florida legislature adjourns. For the moment, he expects us to be content with the courage to be free. A memoir come 288-page exercise in sickle fancy. An ambition tethered to a whole list of owning the libs. It is a mirthless read, lacking even the gleeful invective of Never Give an Inch, the former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's own opening shot at the road to 2024. And predictably, DeSantis berates the leftists. Wait for it, Dom.
Woke.
Unpatriotic and ruinous, all while prostrating himself before his former patron, you know, Trump. So he's writing his presidential memoir, because anyone that's dropping a book right about now is running for president. That's a clear sign. It's a tell. Here's what he says in the book about his former buddy.
Yeah.
I knew that a Trump endorsement would provide me with the exposure to the GOP primary voters across the state of Florida, he admits, discussing his campaign for governor in 18. I was confident that many would see me as a good candidate once they learned about my record. It's all about the bowing and the scraping, the author now notes. Trump also brought a unique star power to the race. If someone had asked me as a kid growing up in the 80s and 90s to name someone who was rich, I probably, nearly all my friends, would have responded by naming Donald Trump. He grew up being a sycophant because of The Apprentice?
No, man, Home Alone. Home Alone 2?
Dominic DeSantis was born in 1978. Growing up, he would have seen Trump's fortunes plummet and his first marriage hit the skids. Apparently, the 80s and 90s success stories Steve Jobs of Apple, say, or Bill Gates of Microsoft failed across DeSantis' radar. Right. These days, by contrast, the governor has a heap of scorn for giants of tech. He depicts big tech as censorious, concentrated, and there's your term, Dom, they're freaking woke. He reiterates his disdain for Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook and George Soros, financier and liberal patron. Still waiting for my Soros check. How about you, Dom? Yeah,
where's our Soros money, man? We've been doing this like 11 years.
DeSantis criticizes Zuckerberg's Center for Technology and Civic Life for funding election operations. He contends that such private-public partnerships undermine public faith in electoral integrity and give Democrats a boost, you know, by turning people out to vote.
Yes, yes. The more people that vote, the worse it is for Republicans, as they have acknowledged throughout their last 40 or 50 years.
You know what DeSantis fails to acknowledge, Dom? Citizens United, you know, the 2010 Supreme Court decision that set corporate money loose on U.S. elections, other than to distinguish campaign donations from ballot mechanics. This weekend at the Four Seasons Hotel in Palm Beach, DeSantis will host a getaway for the deep-pocketed set. And DeSantis also fails to examine the ties that bound the Mercer family, DeSantis donors and Trump stalwarts, with Facebook and Zuckerberg. In 2014, Cambridge Analytica, a now-defunct company that was partly owned by the Mercer family, used Facebook to illegally harvest personal data. Steve Bannon, who would become Trump's 2016 campaign chairman, was a board member and officer. Now, shocker, Dom, Bannon denies personal culpability, but the Mercers do own Breitbart News, which Bannon once led. Parler, owned by Rebecca Mercer, allegedly provided connective tissue for the January 6th insurrection. In the run-up to the riot, the network emerged as a forum for violent threats, so much so that it warned the FBI of specific threats of violence being planned at the Capitol. On the page, not surprisingly, DeSantis does not examine the January 6th attack.
No
looking back, Dom. I mean, no regrets.
You know, we are looking forward.
Dom, he does loudly take credit for a Florida law that would have regulated platforms like Facebook and Twitter. Here again, he omits crucial details. Namely, federal courts found the law unconstitutional.
Details, meetails.
The whole violation of the First Amendment free speech protections. Put simply, with minor exceptions, the government can't tell a private person or entity what to say or how to say it, wrote Kevin Newsom, a Trump-appointed judge on the 11th Circuit. We hold that it is substantially likely that the social media companies, even the biggest ones, are private actors whose rights the First Amendment protects. And I'm going to wrap with this thought, Dom. Florida is urging the Supreme Court to review the case. Adding to the drama, Trump filed an amicus brief. Because of course he did. The high court awaits submission from the Justice Department. And true to form, DeSantis brands the National Legacy Press as the Praetorian Guard of the nation's failed ruling class. And seconds Trump's claim that the fake news media is the enemy of the American people. Another one of those guys, Dom. Yet for all this media bashing in the name of supposed truth, the governor omits the role of Fox News in propagating fake news from the presidential election and defamation cases brought against the news channel.
Legacy news. I guess that does not include the Fox quote-unquote news.
No, they're the good ones. He'll go on the Foxy News, just not fake news.
I mean, when you think about what the Republicans and the MAGAs and the conservatives all claim to be so concerned about, is exactly what Fox News is doing. Right now, Fox News is embroiled in a $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit. It's the biggest media story in the history of media stories. And Fox News is not even allowing their own media reporters to cover any part of it. So they are literally blacking out information that their viewers could use. Also, we've discovered through the filings of the Dominion lawsuit that Fox News purposely, for profit, put on hacks, liars, crazy people for ratings and money. in order to try and, what, overturn the election? But in the course of doing so, of course, it's a defamation case against Dominion. So they purposely lied to their audience about what the facts on the ground were, what kind of credible, quote-unquote, people they were putting on the largest cable news network in America. So they lied to them. They're not telling them what's happening now. And this is what? Not legacy, so they're okay, according to DeSantis.
Dominic, a little bit more from The Courage to be Free. You know, it's got a sub-headline. I'll get that in just a moment. DeSantis' new book proclaims himself the conservative cultural warrior who can turn back the tide of the woke mob.
Oh, God.
Thank God for Ron DeSantis, Dom. And maybe even win back the White House for Republicans in 2024. The governor, Florida governor, uses his memoir, The Courage to be Free. But here's the second part. Florida's blueprint for America's revival. The Florida blueprint, Dom. Given to us by this Florida man, Ron
DeSantis.
I was going
to say, Google Florida man and tell me that's what you want to be like.
Dominic, the battles we have fought in Florida, from defeating the biomedical security state to stifling woke corporations to fighting indoctrination in the schools. Is that what they're doing? They're fighting all these battles. He's a woke warrior. No, he's an anti-woke warrior. let me get
Don't insult the man, Cody.
The battles we have fought in Florida, from defeating the biomedical security state to stifling woke corporations to fighting indoctrination in schools, strike at the heart of what it means to be a Floridian. And of course, Dom, an American, DeSantis wrote. He also gently pushed back at his rival Donald Trump in a tome that seems barely disguised springboard for the upcoming GOP primary run. What'd he say about Trump? Private companies wielding de facto public power is not the best interest of most Americans. What? Oh, no, that was his swipe at Disney.
No.
You know, do you know he got married at Disney, ironically? In a military uniform, standing to the left of his beautiful bride, the blushing Mrs. D-bag DeSantis. Come back. More Devils.
Brain, say your prayers. Eat your vitamins. Be true to yourself. True to your country. Be a real American.
I am a real American. Fight for the rights of every man.
The Devil's Advocates. Making radio great again.
Fight for what's right. Fight for your life.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Phone lines are open. You can join us 844-967-2789. The Grave Digger, former Packer Gilbert Brown, going to join us at the bottom of the hour, so make sure you stick around for that.
Dominic, I see another parallel between DeSantis and former failed Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. The more ambitious the man, the less capable the governance. You know, the presidential run gets in the way of actually taking care of the state's business. Now, we've heard about this new book from DeSantis, the Courage to be Ron Meatball or whatever it's called, the Courage to be Free, you know, the Florida blueprint for America. Well, Jennifer Rubin over at the Washington Post took a little note of the fact things ain't going so great in Florida. The governor just doesn't seemingly pay much attention to that. Here's what she writes down. It's no coincidence that Republican governors who have weaponized government against vulnerable populations represent states that are spectacularly failing their residents on a wide range of issues. She used to mean you, Scott Walker, but we've moved on. There's no better illustration now than Ron DeSantis's war on education. The Florida governor seems to view schools as a battleground for his war on inclusivity and truth, whether it's DeSantis's Don't Say Gay law or his vendetta against African American and gender studies. his obsession with telling teachers what they cannot teach far outweighs his concern for how students are performing. And as it turns out, the performance is pretty lousy. While Florida officials, including DeSantis, have boasted about the state's relatively high proficiency scores amongst fourth graders, they have largely ignored how quickly those scores drop as students grow older. As education journalist Billy Townsend writes in an opinion piece for the Tampa Bay Times, no other state comes close to Florida's level of consistent fourth to eighth grade performance collapse.
Ooh, nobody collapse. Comes close. Wow.
In the last three state rankings of reading and math proficiency by the National Assessment of Educational Progress, Townsend writes, Florida ranked sixth, fourth, and third among states in fourth grade math. In those same years, Florida ranked 33rd, 34th, and tied for 31st in eighth grade. And moreover, the rate at which they drop below their peers in the states is accelerating, Townsend explains. Florida's overall average NAEP state rank regression between fourth and eighth grade since 2003 is 17 spots in math, 18 spots in reading. But since 2015, the averages are 27 spots in math and 19 spots in reading. In fact, the deterioration in Florida schools matches and mostly exceeds the negative impact of COVID nationwide, he writes.
Wow. Crudy, Florida's embarrassing drop-off in performance cannot be understood without examining its 20-year-old policy to hold back lower-performing third graders, which means many students take the fourth grade test when they are at least the age of fifth graders. While it's unclear how many students are kept back in the third grade, Townsend writes that it is significant, which likely temporarily boosts the fourth grade numbers. But that only delays the inevitable cratering of scores in the eighth grade. Perhaps that is one reason many Florida politicians are shying away from standardized testing. One likely reason for the shoddy eighth grade performance: the state ranks 48th in teacher pay, so it's bound to get rotten results. Right now, few seem motivated to pin down the problem and fix what's wrong. And if that isn't distressing enough, consider what is happening to higher education in Florida. Michael McDowell, president emeritus of Misericordia University, warned in a piece for Florida Today last year that enrollment in the state's colleges was projected to decline by 5.5% the 21-22 academic year. Modalo explains the implications of declining college enrollments here in Florida and nationally will seriously impact individuals and the economic viability of Florida and the country. Non-college educated people tend to be poorer, live shorter lives, and pay less taxes. McDowell also notes that they are more likely to avail themselves of government subsidies and the wide variety of services that federal, state, and local governments provide than college-educated Americans. Yet DeSantis, who has two Ivy League degrees, seems to be cheering for failure. Amid reports in 21 that men were making up a smaller portion of students attending college, he declared, "I think that's probably a good sign." So he must be thrilled that Florida's college enrollment is dropping like a stone. College administrators are trying to puzzle out why Florida's decline is so pronounced. It might be an affordability issue. Alternatively, with the white population shrinking in the state, DeSantis's war on wokeness has made college campuses less welcoming to younger, more diverse Floridians. The same people the state needs to educate, to maintain a vibrant economy. Whatever the cause, DeSantis doesn't seem interested in finding a solution. DeSantis's bullying of vulnerable populations and pandering to white grievance are morally objectionable and anti-un-American, but they also come at a price, accelerating the decline of the state's education system. Do we really want DeSantis to do for America what he's done to Florida? Jennifer Rubin ponders at the Washington Post.
Don't you see the parallels between Scott Walker's governance here in the state of Wisconsin?
Yeah, what, 15 minutes when Scott Walker was running for president, he logged in like 15 minutes a day of, you know, governing Wisconsin.
I think Wisconsin was actually better for the 15 minutes right. of governance, because up until then, it was all about setting the table for a presidential run. And we see Ron DeSantis doing the very same, right? All these woke warrior sort of takes on everything.
It's can't... so jumped the shark, man. I mean, really, I mean, come on. Can't you come up with something else? This is so yesterday.
I think he thinks it's a winning formula. I'm not sure why. I mean, why? Because it worked in Florida for you in one elective cycle? I'm not clear why Ron DeSantis thinks this is such a great idea. But certainly he's not going to charm him. He's not a charming fella. All the book reviews basically say, don't read the book. It's not worth the read. And that's the people.
It's not about the read. It's about the pack buying lots of copies of it so you can launder some money to give to DeSantis. Come on, man. It's a means to an end. It could be blank pages.
Gilbert Brown, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, will tell you more about it when he joins us next. Packer Hall of Famer. Can't say that about Dom.
I got nothing but love for you, baby. Uh-huh. I got nothing but love for you,
yeah,
honey.
Whatever.
I got nothing but love for you, baby.
Kicking ass and taking names since the Wisconsin uprising. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, rolling through the Tuesday Happier Happy Hour. Dom, I'm happy to announce we welcome back a fine guest. I'd like to think he's become a friend of ours. He is the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Gilbert, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Hey, Gilbert.
What's up, fellas? What's going on?
Well, Gilbert, we left Earl out today because we know he just slows you down a bit.
Well, you know, Earl got to go to the barber shop. He got to get all that white stuff off his head and face first. That's what he got to do.
Now, Gilbert, Lord, you've been about 3 weeks, going on a month. You and Earl Ingram, every Monday morning, 8 to 9 a.m., have been doing this show together, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. That, of course, is you, Gilbert Brown, and Earl Ingram. Mm-hmm. And I would describe it as big fun. For a Monday morning, man, not many people are waking up Monday morning feeling good. It's work. You got to go to work. And then they hear you, and you're having a hell of a good time, Gilbert. Because you don't have a day job, do you, sir?
No, I don't. But I'm everybody's Monday morning energizer bunny. I just ain't pink or whatever he is. I'm a little brown. I'm the brown bunny.
Now, Gilbert, you've told us a couple times, and I've met you a few times now, sir. You're a bit of a mama's boy. Is mama back in Detroit? Is that where you're at today?
Yeah, actually, guys, I just got my power back on because we had a big ice storm on last Wednesday, and it just came on late last night, and I feel like a new man.
It's been a week, dude. You haven't had power in a week?
Yes, man. No fried chicken, no coffee, no ham, no burger, no cool, no egg, and not even a shower. I was roughing it.
Oh, that is rough. I went a few days without a we were down a hot water heater, man. I thought that was like living in the streets. That was terrible for me, Gilbert. But
big guys can't bird bath, man. I'm just saying.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. He is Gilbert Brown, Packer Hall of Famer, co-host of Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram, bringing it to you Monday mornings on WAUK, on WGBW and WISS, and then we replay it 1 o'clock on Saturdays across the network, Gilbert. Looking forward. I was honest with you when you called me yesterday, or earlier today. I told you the truth. I missed yesterday morning. So I got something to look forward to this Saturday. Gilbert, what'd you guys talk about this week?
Oh, man, we talked. Well, actually, me and Earl usually talk the night before, and we had a whole game plan together, man. We talked about nothing we want to talk about. We just got to rapping, man. We had an awesome guest and awesome calls. And before you know it, man, the hour was up and everybody was going to work. It was 9 o'clock for them.
It goes like that, Gilbert. I understand you were on a recent Packer cruise. You got any stories you can tell us about the Packer cruise?
Yeah, you know, it basically was just a bunch of the good old boys getting together, Coots and Butler and Dotson, because it's two Dotsons, Earl Dotson and Santana Dotson. But I spent a mile of good time with Aaron Jones. That is the nicest young man you ever seen in your life, man. Just down to earth, yes sir, no sir type of guy. I guess, you know, father was in the military and all that stuff, and it shows, man. Respectful, but he's a. And you know what's funny? I took a picture with him and Amon Green. I said, it's like night and day. Now, the Packers' leading rusher, which is Amon Green, he looked like a Sherman tank, and Aaron Jones looked like a super fast Ferrari. I was like, my goodness, both of these cars cannot fit in my driveway.
Gilbert, where did the cruise take you, former and current Packers?
Man, you know what? I don't know. I didn't get off the boat.
Come on, man.
I don't know. If it stopped, I stayed on, waved at everybody, said, y'all hurry up back, because if it pull off, it ain't pulling off without your boat.
Leaving without you, that's right.
So what do you do on a cruise ship all day long, man, other than the buffet lunches? I bet you like those. But
now, there's a bar there too, Prudy.
Yeah, we ate a lot of food, and what was good for me is that I brought my little, I got this little suitcase thing that has a monitor in it, and I can put my PlayStation in there. That keeps me out of trouble. So I brought that, and I watched my, when the Legend Cruise thing didn't have us doing anything, I was in my room watching season 3 and season 4 of Columbo. I love me some Columbo, man.
Like the old detective Columbo, that guy?
Yeah, just one more question there, Gilbert. Hey, Gilbert Brown, the Gravedigger, sticking around. Hey, great to talk to you again, Gilbert. I gotta ask you, and I don't know, so this is a legit question, like the political side, man. Have you been involved in the politics, and were there politics involved in the locker room, man? I just want to get your sense of what it's been like for you.
Oh, man, all we do is play football, man. We brothers. You know what I'm saying? It don't matter who you're pulling for, what side you're on. You know, at the end of the day, we got to go out there and play in between those lines, and we're going to play some football.
Gilbert, how do you make friends with people from very different backgrounds? Even a guy like Brett Favre, man, a kid from Kilton, Mississippi. You're from Detroit. Those backgrounds are nothing alike. Other than the camaraderie of playing the game, how did you guys sort of tear down those differences, if that makes sense? How did you become teammates, if that makes sense, Gilbert?
Well, you got to understand, man, football to me is like one of the greatest people, person, team sports in the world, because you can become from any ethnic background and you get out there and you're giving in the ebb and flow of football. And you leaning on this guy and making sure this guy got to be there when you need him to be there. Black, white, Chinese, whatever. You know what I'm saying? It brings you together. Football taught me how to share. It taught me how to care. And most of the times, people don't understand that kid that's getting bullied in school, them football players usually take care of them. And that's why some of the kids join, because they know at the end of the day, it's a big family and they're going to take care of each other. That's why I love football, because football, no matter who you are, is going to bring out the best in you and next to you.
Gilbert, I know the fans love you, and I've seen you in a public setting. You clearly love your fans. And don't forget, Gilbert Brown's got his own show. You can be a fan under the helmet with the Gravedigger every Monday, 8 to 9 a.m. And if you can't hear it live, tune in at Saturday, 1 to 2 p.m., it plays out across the Civic Media Network. But I saw you at an autograph signing event, and you described the family, the first family there. They were waiting for you. They were, like, looking for you, Gilbert, and there was this big family. And, I mean, they had to be from, like, Sheboygan. They look like typical Wisconsinites. And one dude's not even a Packer fan. One dude's, like, a Chiefs fan. And you described them, and I thought you were being completely sincere. You're like, these are my biggest fans. They come everywhere. There was real affection for that family. Gilbert, how do you build those sort of relationships? That took, what, months, years? How long do relationships like that with the fans take to build?
Well, yeah, they were from Janesville. But you know what, man? It's I always try to tell everybody, you look at the football NFL period, some of the best fan bases are goes with some of the greatest teams. Green Bay Packers, you know, people lie and say Dallas is America's team. You know, they just lie. But anyway. but, man, I tell you, man, we over the years, certain people always shows up, and them same people bring friends and And I always try to tell everybody, we got the best fan base around because, like I said, we had a game, American Bowl over in Tokyo, and all the people over there had Packer hats on. Crazy, crazy. And that's the way it is, man. We love football fans. Fans love us, and we love them. And where can you go where it's always a standing room only? You ain't going to find that in Chicago. You ain't going to find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, out come tickets. You know what I'm saying?
Now, that doesn't seem quite fair. What about the Detroit Lion fans? I went to the old Ford Field.
Who?
I know, man. They were depressed when we went there.
The Pontiac Silverdome, you mean?
Oh, my bad. That was such a fine facility, Gilbert.
It's an Amazon facility now.
I try to tell everybody, the Pontiac Silverdome had to be one of the hardest places to play just because it felt like cement, and you got that. You go get that carpet from Menards that you put out in green. That's what it was like playing on that, man. It was horrible. But I tell you what, man. The Lions' roar is getting louder. It goes meow.
Now, as a guy who's from Detroit, now Dom, my partner here, is also likes to claim Detroit as his hometown. You know,
I told you he bumped his head. I told you.
Come on, man. It's like people from Hortonville know where Livonia is, Gilbert.
Oh, my God. I had a couple people woofing and woofing. I said, you know what? Hey, man, act like you've been there before. Then I tell them, oh, right, you've never been there before. My bad.
Gilbert Brown, our fine guest. He is the Gravedigger. He is the host of Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram, Monday mornings, 8 to 9 a.m., originating on WAUK, replaying across the network on Saturdays, 1 to 2 p.m. And, Gilbert, I'm looking forward, man. We're looking for sponsors for you right now. Call right now if you want to sponsor the Gilbert Brown Under the Helmet. But I'm thinking like a Gilbert Burger and a Gilbert Burger tour. And if you need a chaperone, I'll take you around the state of Wisconsin. And we'll just order Gilbert burgers at each and every stop, Gilbert. And, you know, you can sign some autographs and perhaps cash some Gilbert burger checks somewhere.
Some burgers around there that I don't know about that they got on the menu. And, you know, sometimes they at least got to let me try and see if it's up to par. You know what I mean? You can't just throw a hockey puck in between two pieces of bread and call it a Gilbert burger. You know what I mean?
Well, I do, sir. And let me ask you, when you go out in public, at least in the great state of Wisconsin, where you are still beloved, do you get a lot of free burgers? Do you ever ask the guy to comp you a burger? Like, hey, come on, call it a Gilbert burger.
If I do that, I wouldn't be able to make it. I wouldn't be able to fit back in my car. No. It's like two or three places in Wisconsin. I'm not going to name them. But they got the best burgers around. I'm gonna have to make me a burger list and have everybody go try them, because there's two or three places on there. I swear, they slapped somebody's mama and made them burgers, man.
I think there's a food critic from the local Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is recently retired, Gilbert. Maybe it could be a night job for you, man.
Nah, I can't do that, man, because I've been to bust my britches.
You got to stay in shape. Gilbert, hey, what would you tell a guy like Crudy, Gilbert? Obviously, you were a lot heavier when you were in prime shape, fighting all those guys on the NFL. You've trimmed up over the years. How what would you attribute to that to? Is it diet? Is it exercise? Combination thereof? What would you tell Crudy to ease off on?
Well, first of all, you got to push away from the table. You got to push away from the table, man. I mean, seriously.
I'll do it after you do it, Gilbert.
My deal was, my father passed away at 48, man. Oof, he was congestive heart failure and all that stuff. And I didn't want to be that way for my kids, man. And I didn't have to, I wasn't choking nobody no more. So I just backed up a little bit and you know, still, you know, walk a little bit. Instead of eating 8-piece, I eat 7 now, you know?
7-piece chicken, man. Do they make that? That's like 3 different orders. Isn't it, Gilbert?
One's an appetizer.
Gilbert, appreciate you coming round, man. Gilbert Brown, he is the co-host of Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Mondays, 8 to 9 a.m. on WAUK, WGBW, and replay. And out on Saturday, don't forget this week's episode, replays Saturday, 1 to 2 p.m. across the Civic Media Network. Gilbert, can't wait to catch up with you real soon. Be well, man. Enjoy a hot shower.
Thanks, Gilbert.
Thanks, fellas. Y'all take care now.
Nothing like a shower and a 7-piece. Come back. More Devil's Advocates.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now. 844-967-2789.
You know, once upon a time, people, when I would go out in public, they'd say, oh, is Dirty Dom with?
What?
Especially like the older progressive ladies. They always kind of had a thing for Dirty Dominic.
Yeah, he's, baby.
He's the bad boy of political talk. And now I got friends like, you know, Gilbert Brown, the Gravedigger. Well, I got a lot more asks. Like, people are like, hey, how do I get a hold of Gilbert?
I'm thinking, do I listen on Mondays?
Well, yes, absolutely. Call him. You could call him. Same number you call us at. 844-967-2789. But I found between the Charlie Barons and the Gilbert Brown, I'm much more popular. Like, I've got cooler friends now.
Oh, man.
Far cooler than you've ever been.
Yeah.
Like, all your...
Oh, man. No, I get it. I get it, fanboy. I know where you're coming from. It's something different. It's something new. But trust me, you'll be back.
Can I point out one other thing?
Sure, man.
Gilbert Brown asked me today to reintroduce him to Charlie Barons. But he didn't say, like, and how's Dom doing?
Yeah. Why not? Well, why do you think that is, Mike?
I think it's the exclusion of you from the conversations yeah. I have with him. How's Dom doing? Ah, who really cares?
Who's that guy?
Gilbert Brown, thank you for joining us. It wasn't really for any particular reason other than the fact that, you know, we've kind of become friends. Sometimes
I appreciate that, but look, I want to get some political thoughts out of the man. You know what I'm saying? This is the second time we've been on, and I did ask light pop, but come on. I mean, we are a political show, and I get you're the sports guy, Crudy. I get all that. You know what I'm saying? Did you give 110% today? There's only so many questions you can ask. I like to know what his position on abortion is. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. You know what I'm saying?
You got to go there? You can't just be a happy-go-lucky guy.
That's what we do, dude. I mean, that's what we're talking about. That's, and I appreciate and I get sports, man. Not all the other stuff. Like, whatever. You know, entertainment is a wonderful thing. But I'm also about governance and self-awareness. And I think those are questions that I want answered.
Here's an insight I would have liked to have asked Gilbert. And I thought about it, but you kept talking. The tribalism. And I'm not saying it's exactly parallel.
What do you mean by that?
Tribalism. We live in a world
where
people are very tribal. And it first stems from like our love of our sports team, right? You know, I bleed green and gold or red and white because I'm a Badger fan. And I hate you, Ohio State. And I do mean that, Ohio State fans. I do hate you. I don't like you.
You're just mad because the other guy got $100 in that bar in Columbus.
It's more than that. It's the jerkiness of the fans and the attitude of the Ohio State University. I've never liked the attitude.
Oh, so
I hate the college.
So bravado, you take a exception with bravado.
Exactly. Something
yeah,
like that.
Come on, man.
Be humble like yours truly. So I don't really like Ohio State fans. But you know the tribalism, because literally, when Ohio State comes to town, My kid will ask me how my football Tourette's going. I said, just fine till Ohio State comes to town. Then I'm you bleepity bleep sons of a bleepity bleep. And I see it as a character flaw. I know it's a shortcoming.
What, only one?
Really, it's my only character flaw. My rabid fanness for the hometown team. Okay, but it's so tribal.
You're
really
in the tribalism that
rational.
You're actually talking about. But isn't that what sports teams are all about, man? I mean, that's why your fan is short for fanatic.
But don't some people treat their politics in such fashion? Now, we often joke on this show. It's never personal. It's only politics.
Yes, unfortunately, we've witnessed that. I mean, Trump was the all-star, the professional wrestling president. That's what happens when you treat your politics like it's an entertainment venue, and it is not. And I get it. You want to be entertained. You want someone to sway you, to carry you, to lift you up, to inspire you, you know, or just to simply entertain you. But that's not really necessarily what I would consider self-governance to be. That doesn't help the cause.
Here's what I would say that Gilbert Brown does bring. At least to the Monday morning shows with Earl and replaying across the network, Civic Media Network, 1 o'clock on Saturdays. He's got an experience I've never lived. I've never been a black man living in rural white Wisconsin.
Not right.
In the Fox Valley and dealing with the cops. And obviously the grave digger, he's an enormous dude. He's like still to this day, he's 340. Well, he's clearly not your run-of-the-mill guy at the Walmart in Green Bay, listening on WGBW 97.9 FM because he loves us. But you know what I mean? There are experiences and things, and I don't think it has to be through the prism of politics. But, you know, I was curious how this man entertained himself on the Packer cruise, so I blew some of that time.
Apparently, bring the video game console with, man. I'm down with that. We play some vids.
844-967-2789. Rico from Rock County. How you doing, man?
Hey, Rico.
Hey, how you doing? I was just, I got caught up in the old, on the way home, I got caught up, Vicky had on Dan Kelly. But my attention span only lasted about 15, 20 seconds.
Doesn't he come across as pretty pompous? Like, I mean, he's not a likable fella. He's not like Crudy.
No.
More like Don.
No, In the little bit of time I listen to him, what comes out of his mouth, I know the people here in Wisconsin are really, really strong conservative. They're really, really strong on their constitutional values. And I thought, oh, my, from you? You're giving us constitution, this guy? The guy from Pat Roberts Law School is going to give us constitutional values? Oh, my Lord.
You know, it's not just the bad law school, it's the willingness to subvert the Constitution and be an advisor to the RNC and the
a willing participant in an insurrection.
Well, perhaps just giving legal advice to the coup against the Constitution.
Well, I'm sure
I draw a modest distinction.
Well, perhaps the fine show host that is Vicky McKenna obviously would have asked him the questions of what did you do to earn the $120,000 when you were on the payroll of the Wisconsin GOP and the RNC? What advice did you provide? I'm sure those were ask questions, right?
Rico. Did she ask a follow-up question? Rico, got to turn down your radio. Rookie move. Thank you for listening, though, Rico.
Yeah, we appreciate that. We appreciate all you people. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Despite your politics. Or because of them.
It's okay to have them. You got to have it. Be involved. Do something. But if you're wrong, if you think we're wrong, you can call us. That's what we do. We engage on here. And I'll tell you when you're wrong.
Busted Pencils. Educated Educators Talking Education with Johnny Lupinati and Dr. Tim Slecker. Tonight at 7, Native Roots Radio is next. Keep it locked. Civic Media will do it for you again tomorrow on the radio.